satisfaction when it put both of those things in its storage. Next, it checked its status. It remembered it had managed to become a level 16 warlock before drifting off to sleep, meaning it could unlock one additional skill. Skill list. Warlock. Unlocked skills. Summon familiar. Power overwhelming. Available skills. Blood magic. Crystallize magic. Demonology. You can unlock one additional restricted skill from this job. Once again, its options seemed oddly limited. At level 5, it could only pick summon familiar. At level 10, it had a bare-bones choice between power overwhelming and blood magic. It chose the former because it seemed like the more useful one, even if it turned out to have bad compatibility with stealth and assassination. Not to mention the other skill looked more than a little dubious. Blood magic. The warlock offers up his own life force to power his magic. Requirements? Level 10 warlock. Endurance, 60. Type? Toggled. Off. Range? Self. Effects. Ruin and domination spells will consume HP instead of MP. Reduces the HP cost of ruin and domination spells by 3% per level of this skill. It was a skill that demanded the mimic willingly sacrifice its HP to use magic. There was no way the monster would agree to something like that, though. Preserving MP was important, but keeping HP above zero was its top priority. It may have been a different story if it had the power of regeneration like that flesh maiden or maybe the healing magic that adventurers were seen using, but such things were beyond its reach for the moment. It might reconsider its choice if it gained some method of instantly recovering its HP. And then, realization hit it like a whale crashing into a rowboat. Potions. The magical red liquid that would miraculously close wounds and restore HP. Those three vials it crunched yesterday would have been incredibly helpful in the fight it just went through. It finally understood why those humans kept the tasty thing bottled up rather than drink it immediately. Healing potions were not food. They were medicine. Okay, it didn't use the word medicine, exactly. That much was still a foreign concept, but at least it recognized them as tasty thing that makes the pain go away. Close enough, right? Regret was not tasty. It had wasted more than a few of those life-saving vials during its time, completely oblivious to the fact that it could save them for later. But now that it was aware of it, it made up its mind to keep a ready stock of them inside its storage. The importance of preparation was yet another lesson it had picked up during this dungeon crawl, among other things. It truly felt a smidgen of gratitude towards the Flesh Maiden for showing it just how conceited it had become. Ah, but it was getting sidetracked. It still had two new skills to check up on. Crystallize Magic. Binds magic spells to a more permanent form, allowing it to be stored for later use. Requirements. Level 15 caster job. Intelligence 90. Wisdom 60. Type. Active. Activation time. Instant. Cost. 0 MP. Range. Self. Effects. The next area effect spell will have its MP cost increased by 25%. The next area effect spell will be stored temporarily inside a conjured spell crystal. Shattering a spell crystal will unleash the stored area effect spell. Spell crystals will last up to 6 minutes per level of this skill before disappearing. Another complicated skill with a lot of weird restrictions. However, its effects did seem to be worth the trouble. If the mimic could prepare a bunch of these crystals in advance, it wouldn't need to chant at all. All it had to do was keep them in its storage and then throw them out at the right moment. However, that seemed limited to only area effect spells, of which it currently only had two. Mass Panic. Requirements. Level 5 Warlock. Intelligence 15. Mental Fortitude 15. School. Domination. Type. Area Effect. Cost. 50 MP. Range. 5 meters. Effects. Sends all living things in the immediate area into a magically induced panic attack. Has no effect on undead, demons, and golems. Mass Panic had the problem that it only affected the area around the caster. If the enemy was already that close, then there was a good chance they would be able to interrupt the chant. But if that was sealed in a spell crystal, it would eliminate that possibility. It should even be possible to throw the crystal and drastically increase the range. The usability of this spell would go way up. Dark Explosion. Requirements, level 13 Warlock. Intelligence, 60. Mental Fortitude, 40. School, Ruin. Type, Area Effect. Cost, 120 MP. Range, 25 meters. Effects. Causes a violent shockwave of darkness at a target area. The force of the spell will forcefully repel all matter within 3 meters of the target area. Grows in power in dark places or at night, gaining up to 50% additional force depending on the environment. Dark Explosion, on the other hand, had a rather lengthy chant that took 3 or 4 seconds to complete, significantly longer than something like Ebonfire or Shadowbolt. Therefore, preparing the spell in advance would allow the mimic to throw it out instantly at the opportune moment. A strategy that fit in perfectly with its dirty fighting. Would the other skill be able to compete with that? Demonology. The study of demons and demonic rituals. Requirements, level 15 Warlock, level 3 Summon Familiar, Wisdom 60, Mental Fortitude 60. Type, Passive. Range, Self. Effects. Increases the cost of Summon Familiar by 2% per level of this skill. Allows the Warlock to contract and summon one additional demon through the Summon Familiar skill at level 1 of this skill. Allows the Warlock to contract and summon one additional demon through the Summon Familiar skill at level 7 of this skill. That did indeed seem to be the case. The succubus had proved to be extremely useful when it came to infiltration and deception. Her magic was nothing to scoff at either, but she was sorely lacking when it came to close quarters combat. Therefore, if the mimic had another demon under its command to fill that gap, they would be able to fight far more efficiently as a group. It even had the added boon of allowing it to use more MP during the summoning, meaning its demons would grow steadily more powerful. There is strength in numbers. This was the simple truth the chest had gleaned from its fights against adventurers, and it had experienced it firsthand. It was highly likely that the chest would have perished in the encounter with the Flesh Maiden if Zira wasn't there. It would be a long time before the skill reached level 7, but sometimes the wait made the meal all the more tasty. Ah, but crystallized magic looked tasty as well. But which one was more delicious? Telling just by looking really wasn't possible, after all. The greedy mimic wanted both, and that could technically happen once its warlock job reached level 20, but it still had to choose the one it wanted first. This really seemed like a tough decision. Magical grenades, or another capable minion. If only there was someone around to give the stumped chest a fresh perspective. Oh.
Greetings, Master,
said Zira some 10 seconds and a flash of light later. This was immediately followed by,
Ah! What the fuck?
The dumbfounded succubus grimaced fiercely as she took in the surrounding scenery. The aftermath of two shapeshifters going at each other with bladed weapons was on par with a natural disaster. Dried up blood and dismembered body parts littered the floor, including an out-of-place, half-molten head resting awkwardly in a puddle of something. The nearby pile of charred meat that used to be the Flesh Maiden was the biggest problem. Not the way it looked, although that was pretty disgusting in and of itself, but rather the horrible stench it gave off. That indescribable scent of burnt flesh seemed to permeate the entire room.
What in the hell happened here?
She asked with a hand over her mouth and nose. It wasn't helping, though.
I won,
said the mimic with a hint of pride.
Yes, I can see that. I mean, what's with this horrible smell?
What smell?
Right. Treasure chests didn't have noses. The succubus actually envied that lucky bastard of a box right now. Technically speaking, she didn't really need hers either. So she took a page out of her master's book and shapeshifted it shut. Even if the horrible stench didn't technically cause her any harm, unpleasant things were still unpleasant.
Is the smell tasty?
Probed the mimic.
No, Master. It's extremely disgusting. I would not recommend trying it.
If it did, it would undoubtedly get pissed off. Which meant snack time until it calmed down. And Zira did not want any more of that. She didn't, okay?
Oh. Okay.
It responded dejectedly. Higher mental functions or not, It still felt disappointed when the verdict of this new thing was not tasty. The succubus walked over to the former dungeon master and gave it a curious look. This was the first time she had seen something burned up so thoroughly before. And yet it still seemed to be leaking.
Master, what did you do to this thing?
I hit her with a big spell.
Zira's eyes widened in shock. A single spell? Given how quickly she moved and how she shrugged off having half her torso bitten off, Zira was convinced she must have been at least level 40. Not to mention she was obviously experienced at fighting casters. Then again, nobody was really prepared for the ridiculous things this box did. It probably used some underhanded trick to seize a weakness. She chuckled. What she was most surprised about wasn't the power it displayed, but the fact it actually remembered to use it. It seemed like the succubus would have to give her master some credit. Just a little, though.
All right, then. What do you want from me?
She asked in a businesslike tone. It was highly unlikely this chance summoned her for no reason.
Do you know the demonology skill?
It asked.
The
succubus furrowed her brows and dug through her memory, but had trouble recalling anything about that particular skill. That was to be expected since her knowledge regarding the warlock job was quite superficial. She wasn't one herself, after all. She merely worked with them. Often against them, actually. That was pretty much her expected behavior, though. Relationships between a warlock and its familiar were always founded on distrust and deception. And with her being a succubus that thrived on such things, it meant she was trusted even less. Nobody in their right mind would want to listen to her opinions, lest they fall for her schemes and ended up as a dried-up corpse in a ditch somewhere. She really didn't need to go that far, though. The warlocks she managed to turn the tables on were complete idiots who practically killed themselves. There was that one guy who stuck his penis in her mouth and gave her some vague command like, "Make me cum buckets." How did he not realize that was an open invitation for her to suck the very life out of his dick? But her current master was radically different from all of her previous ones. Well, that was to be expected, considering it was a monster with no sex drive. It treated her like dirt, constantly ate her flesh, and even tortured her psychologically with its inane attitude and brazen shapeshifting habits. And yet, it understood and even encouraged her urges to devour the lives of mortal men. Sure, it was idiotic, merciless, and completely devoid of common sense, but this was still the best working relationship Zira had ever had with another person. Well, another mortal, at any rate. Deliberately or not, that chest still did wonders to alleviate her boredom. That was ultimately the most important thing. It had only been a week or so since their contract began, yet she found herself incredibly curious as to how far it would be able to go and what sort of things it would accomplish.
No, Master. I am not familiar with this skill,
she answered, after putting her thoughts in order.
What about crystallized magic?
I don't know that one either.
The mimic proceeded to explain both skills and how it wasn't sure which one to pick. Would it go for the nasty crystal surprise or opt for the extra pair of hands to help out in fights? It seems that it had been obsessing over this decision for quite a while. However, Zira almost immediately pointed out something that her master didn't consider.
You do realize what would happen if you dropped one of those crystals, right?
The chesty warlock thought back on the first time it used Dark Explosion. The spell had been aimed at a group of 7 goblins foraging for food in the forest. 2 of them were right at the center of the detonation. They became red mist. 3 of the others were closer to the edge of the spell's area of effect and were thrown into the air like rag dolls. They crashed into trees and rocks at high speeds, dying instantly from the impact. The last 2 were outside the blast zone, but still suffered heavy damage from fragmented stones and bones sent flying by the explosion. Having recalled that rather vivid memory, the mimic imagined what would happen if it fumbled a dark explosion sealed inside a spell crystal. Proficiency level increased. Demonology is now level 1. Wisdom plus 2. Mental fortitude plus 2. Sometimes it really was best to bounce ideas off other people. Part 2. Establishing a contract with a demon was generally believed to be a complicated ritual that involved a number of seemingly random ingredients and materials. There were indeed such practices that may be performed, such as the ritual of Zul'Garoth. That particular ceremony involved butterflies, blood, a fox, a severed head, some cheese, and skipping rope with some entrails. The product of this ritual would be the creation of a perfectly ordinary sweet roll that was actually kind of stale. Not the best use of a severed head, if a certain mimic had anything to say about that. The demonology skill flooded the animate chest's mind with the knowledge of several dubiously useful rituals like that. But none of those were actually related to establishing a contract with a demonic entity and calling them forth to this world. No, that bit was actually much more straightforward. All the warlock had to do to get the ball rolling was reach out into the beyond, a process that boiled down to concentrating a bit and then thinking aloud a series of numbers. 1-800-7355-9687-7685.
Hello,
spoke a voice directly into its mind. It sounded rough and gritty, like someone had been eating gravel for breakfast every day for 2 decades.
You've reached Demons R Us,
it continued.
My name is Carl, and I'll be your liaison for today.
Hey, Carl, responded the mimic.
It seemed it had managed to connect to the same agent it got the first time.
Oh, if it isn't that amusing little box. How have you been, buddy?
Pretty good. Ate some people. Gained some levels.
Hey, that's super. So, what can I do for you today?
I got a new skill that said I can get another contract.
All right, just a second. Okay, can you forward your status to me? You do remember how to do that, right?
Carl had spent nearly 3 hours teaching the mimic how to send its status over a telepathic link the first time around. It messed up several times and even somehow forwarded it to Carl's boss by mistake before it could get it just right. Carl caught more than a little flack over that particular event.
Yes, sending it now,
it replied.
Okay, I've received it. Oh, you gotta rank up. Grats! Demonology, is it? Hold, please.
There were some more half-tapping, half-clacking noises before Carl continued.
Good news, my square friend. Your request for additional demonic support has been approved. Now then, what species are you looking to form a covenant with?
Fiend.
Male or female?
There's a difference.
Males are generally more intelligent, while females are more ferocious.
Then female.
A tall one or a short one?
Tall.
Do you prefer big or small chests?
Big,
answered the mimic immediately. How was this even a question? Bigger treasure chests had more shiny things inside them and were therefore better without a doubt.
I know, right? Sorry for asking again. Company policy.
No problem.
The question did strike it as a little out of place at first, but it didn't worry too much about it. Carl himself said it didn't affect the demon's performance in any way and was mostly a formality of establishing the contract. He asked it some more questions, followed by some weird mechanical noises. A few minutes later, they got to the last one.
Any additional requests?
Last time, the mimic had said it wanted something that was good at hiding and got a succubus specialized in infiltration and covering her tracks through dream manipulation. That wasn't quite what it had in mind, but it still worked out, so it had no complaints. This time was even simpler. It just needed a vanguard that could take hits in its place. And pretty much any fiend fit that bill. Still, having one with more than a single use would be good.
It doesn't matter, as long as it's handy.
Understood. All right. Now all we need to do is wait for... Oh, never mind. Your application got an instant reply. Just give me a sec here. There. Done. Your new familiar is all set up and ready to be summoned. Will that be all for today?
Yes.
Then would you like to fill out a survey to-
No.
Understood. Thank you again for contacting Demons R Us. We hope to hear from you again.
Well, that was over and done with. It immediately proceeded with the summoning, which caught the attention of Zira. She stopped staring absent-mindedly at the dungeon core and went over to see her new co-contractor. Part of her was really looking forward to having someone else be the snack for once. 10 seconds and 300 MP later, a new demon appeared in the dungeon. A giant form about 250 centimeters in height, almost a full meter taller than Zira, loomed over them. Counting the slightly curved horns that were pointing straight up, it was closer to 270 centimeters tall. The summoned female fiend had bright green hair that went past her shoulders. It was unruly, thick, and voluminous, giving her a rather wild appearance. A pair of long, elf-like ears sprouted out from beneath it. Her skin was a bright, eye-catching red that was impossible to conceal. Her eyes were bright green, similar to the hair. They gave off a keen glare that looked for the weakness in others. Her face, as a whole, didn't look half bad. Humans would honestly consider her to be cute or pretty if she stopped scowling and baring her pointed teeth at her surroundings. Below her chin was a choker with a metal plate in front that seemed to protect her neck. Immediately below that were her breasts. Unlike Zira, they appeared to be more modestly proportioned when compared to the rest of her. Their actual size, however, easily triumphed over the succubus due to the difference in height. They were bound together tightly by a white sports bra-like chest piece that left her clearly defined abs and well-muscled lower back exposed. An extremely tight pair of very short shorts fit snugly around her lower end. The highly muscular and disproportionately massive thighs were nearly as thick as her relatively narrow waist. They strained against the white-hot pants, threatening to rip them apart at any moment. Her legs beneath the knees were encased in metal plate greaves. The outside of her left thigh was covered by interlinking metal plates that went all the way up to her waist, leaving the inner thigh and her entire right upper leg exposed to the air. Her arms, like the rest of her, had a significant amount of muscle that was clearly visible along her bare shoulders and upper arms. Her biceps didn't bulge out that much, but looked to be quite dense all the same. Heavy-looking metal gauntlets were strapped to her forearms. However, these didn't seem like armor. Her palms, fingers, and the underside of her forearms were left unarmored, for one thing. Actually, given the way the gauntlets naturally covered the knuckles and the backs of her hands in metal plates, they were probably intended to be weapons that enhanced punching attacks. They also looked like they'd add a significant amount of weight to each strike. Also, there were four of them. An extra pair of shoulders grew out from behind the primary ones to give her a total of four powerful arms. Well, she was definitely handy, though perhaps not quite in the way the mimic meant. It made a mental note to be as unambiguous as possible the next time it spoke to anyone from Demons R Us. As for the newly summoned fiend, she seemed to do a few flexes and twists to get used to her physical body while looking around the room. Her line of sight stopped on Zira, who was standing off to her left.
Huh? You're my new master?
She asked with a dumb look on her face.
No. Demons can't summon other demons, you dimwit,
replied the succubus as she pointed at the other demon's feet.
Your master is down there.
The confused tower of muscle looked down to see a simple wooden treasure chest. The mimic was currently still busy appraising its new minion. She seemed to be slightly more armored on her left side than on her right, which was a bit odd. The various metal plates strapped to her body appeared to be made from something resembling steel, but the strange red sheen they gave off meant it was anything but. Her horns seemed to also be made of that stuff. Her top and bottom garments, on the other hand, were made of a flexible white fabric that hugged around her womanly bits snugly without obscuring movement. Still failing to comprehend, the newly summoned fiend squatted down to get a closer look. It looked exactly like an unassuming wooden treasure chest, no matter how much she studied it.
This thing?
She asked Zira, while pointing curiously at it with her two right hands.
How's a box supposed to be my master? Or anyone's master, for that matter?
Lean in closer, came the first command.
Yeah! It really is the box!
That order definitely came from the thing in front of her. It would seem that the succubus in the room wasn't just fucking with her for shits and giggles like she thought.
I said lean in closer, it demanded.
The fiend was still dumbstruck, but did as ordered. It was part of the contract she just agreed to, so she put her face even closer to the treasure chest without much thought. She was now close enough to it that she could lick it if she stretched out her tongue. And then the mimic jumped at her and bit her across the face. Its powerful teeth sank into her skull, but failed to crush it. She screamed, more in surprise than pain. The sudden shock of having a vicious chest clamp onto her face made her stumble backwards from her squatting position and fall on her tight rump.
What the fuck? Are you trying to eat my face or something?
She tried to pull it off her head, but couldn't put any strength into her arm since that would count as attacking her master directly.
If,
was the immediate reply.
Why?
The other den is really tasty. I want to know if you're any better.
Oh. Okay.
She immediately stopped her struggling and let the mimic do as it pleased. It nibbled on her face for a while, and the fiend just sat cross-legged without uttering a sound. Zira was, understandably, completely baffled at the turn of events. Not the mimic trying to eat things, that was expected. But a demon willingly accepting that sort of treatment was strange, to say the least. Eventually, the mimic had enough and detached from the red woman, landing deftly on its spider legs. It had gone for her face because her other limbs were all armored up and didn't seem like they would break under its jaws. The skull was also much thicker and tougher than it seemed, which was only to be expected of a species that thrived on close-quarters combat.
So,
said the fiend while black blood streamed down her forehead,
how was I?
The mimic replied by sticking out its tongue and making a
bleh
sound.
Not tasty at all. Snack is much tastier.
Oh, come on! I can be tasty too!
Impossible.
Zira always tasted the same no matter how many times it ate her, so it was unlikely this new demon would just change suddenly.
Grrr!
A fact that seemed to somehow tick her off.
What? You want to be eaten alive?
Retorted the succubus, wide-eyed.
No. I mean, not particularly. I just hate losing. Especially to a... Wait, snack?
That would be my job description,
said the junk food in question, albeit a bit hesitantly. The fiend broke out into mocking laughter.
You're a snack! To think one of you stuck-up whores would end up as nothing but some box's afternoon meal!
She kept rolling around on the ground, clutching her stomach and unable to hide her enjoyment of her compatriot's suffering. Well, all demons did that, but this situation was extra tasty for her. After all, fiends and succubi never got along with one another. This was hardly a surprise considering the two species of demon were pretty much polar opposites of one another.
Yeah, yeah. Laugh it up while you can.
Zira casually dismissed the other demon's mockery with a wave of her hand. This much humiliation was nothing compared to what the mimic had put her through. Also, she was secretly looking forward to watching this newcomer go through the same level of abuse. As for the chest in question, it had already lost interest in their shenanigans and was moving towards the whole reason it came to this dungeon in the first place. The dungeon core. With its previous owner dealt with, the core's automatic defense system no longer activated and anyone could approach it. And when the mimic got within a meter of the floating red orb, it suddenly got an offer. The Lidagar dungeon complex has recognized you as its rightful ruler. Do you wish to become the master of this dungeon? Yes or no? The two demons in the room seemed to notice it was doing something and stopped their bickering so they could see what happened. Zira had no idea why her master wanted to come here, but she had a pretty good guess. The newcomer had no idea as to much of anything right now, so her curiosity was on an entirely different level. And then the mimic took out a sword and slashed at the dungeon core. The steel blade was knocked backwards the instant it made contact with the crystal, as if someone had forcefully deflected it with a shield. Your attack has been repelled.
Ha!
It cursed out loud. It tried once again, this time by putting as much strength and weight into it as it could. The overused and under-maintained weapon was repelled with even greater force when it struck the red crystal, causing the blade to break off at the hilt and fly off into the air. It then promptly sheathed itself inside Zira's torso, right between the breasts.
Yeah!
She screamed. It stung like a bitch, but it was still more tolerable than snack time.
What the heck are you doing?
She chided her master.
You can't break a dungeon core with a shitty weapon like that.
Oh, replied the mimic. Then how about a different weapon? Ah, but the mithril daggers might break as well against that indestructible ball. That wouldn't be tasty at all.
You there,
it called out to the red fiend.
Name?
You did well to ask me that, mortal.
She took a haughty pose with her arms crossed and started monologuing while looking smug for some reason.
Know that this one's name will one day be known throughout the lands as—
Your name is now Arms,
it interrupted. It remembered it could just check her status rather than asking directly. Her name was incredibly long and difficult to say, so it just went with a nickname. It could have just as easily have shortened it to Cora, but that would mean acknowledging her as a sentient being rather than the thing she truly was.
Go break the shiny thing,
it ordered. She seemed to have a good bit of strength, and her species looked to have considerably more muscle mass than mimics, so it was as good a time as any to see just how powerful she really was. The demon herself seemed to be looking forward to finding that out as well, as she had completely forgotten her self-introduction was cut short and was already getting oddly psyched up.
Oh! I can smash it?
Yes! Smash it!
All right!
Fiends thrived on violence and combat, and loved smashing things in general. Therefore, Cora felt overjoyed when her first real order was to smash a thing. She walked over to the comparatively tiny dungeon core and lowered her stance to the extreme. The mimic quietly walked away from her since it had a sneaking suspicion of what would happen next. Cora turned to her side and started winding up. The muscles on her right arms and shoulders bulged out even more. She then hurled them forward while spinning on her heel, putting all her body weight behind the blow. Her metal gauntlets made a duo of heavy-sounding hits on the core, but were bounced backwards all the same. The sudden change in direction would undoubtedly have snapped her arms in half if those metal plates didn't absorb much of that counter-impact.
Gah!
Shouted the fiend in frustration. It seemed her power wasn't enough to bypass whatever defense that thing had. Not that she cared. All right, she did care. She cared immensely, actually.
You stupid ball!
She shouted.
Don't think you can make a fool of me! Ora!
She then took another swing at it with one of her right arms. Your attack has been repelled.
Ora!
And then a follow-up strike with one of the lefts. Your attack has been repelled.
Ora! Ora! Ora!
She kept calling out with each failed swing while picking up the pace. If a single big hit wouldn't do, then how about 500 smaller hits?
Ora! 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 Ora!
Her hands became a blur as she unleashed a torrent of punches on that infuriating crystal orb. All of them failed to do a single point of damage. She grew more and more frustrated until she did a final attack with a spinning roundhouse kick while screaming,
Hora!
Her armored foot made an almost echoing thud when she struck the core. This attack didn't get repelled. It didn't break the core, either. What happened was that the glowing crystal ball was dislodged from its magically affixed position and was sent flying towards the edge of the room as if it were a kickball. The core hit the stone brick wall hard enough to shake the entire room, then fell to the ground with a clear gong-like sound.
Take that!
Screamed Cora after it.
Piece of shit ball! Showed you who's boss, didn't I?
It's still perfectly whole, though,
pointed out Zira.
You obviously can't break a dungeon core with just brute strength. Only moronic muscleheads and retarded boxes would keep trying, despite knowing that.
Showed that ball who's boss,
insisted her red-skinned co-contractor while completely ignoring the succubus's snide attitude. The mimic, on the other hand, walked closer to the still glowing core. It seemed that Snack was right, and cracking this thing open was beyond its means. It really wanted to get its revenge on this place, so leaving without breaking the core seemed like it would leave a bad taste in its mouth. Then again, it did kill the dungeon master. That was rather satisfying on its own. So it decided to consider its mission fulfilled. On second thought, not breaking the core might be a good thing.
Arms, pick it up and bring it outside.
Kay,
she replied in high spirits. Fiends hated being used for menial labor, but Cora was pretty happy right now. How could she not be? It had been a really long time since she'd last been to the physical realm, and then she was told to smash a thing almost immediately. Being able to move around so much with an actual body felt amazing.
Master, why are you telling her to bring that thing along?
Asked Zira, dumbfounded.
I want the shiny thing!
General information. Corlentaprix Kasusun Kawinthiaxa. Fiend. Pit. Female. 312 years old. Level 12 Fiend. Level 8 Berserker. 615 out of 615 HP. Plus 1 per second. 67 out of 67 MP. Plus 0.1 per second. Attributes. Strength, 100. Dexterity, 42. Agility, 58. Endurance, 100. Intelligence, 16. Wisdom, 16. Mental fortitude, 84. Fiend skills. Demonic armaments, level 4. Second wind, level 3. Berserker skills. Bloodlust, level 4. Other skills. Idiotic strength, level 3. Brawling mastery, level 4. Part 3. The Mimic and its two familiars were finally going to depart the core chamber. They had spent a bit too long in there, and the monster had gotten hungry. There were a few leftover wolf corpses in storage, but those were not enough to completely satiate it. It wanted to go before the debilitating starvation conditions started to set in. They still had that map they looted earlier, so they wouldn't get lost on their way out, at least. Next would be the matter of the 1-meter-wide crystalline dungeon core. The Mimic wanted to bring the shiny thing along, but it wouldn't fit in its storage. The swirling portal to the monster's pocket dimension could only expand to about 60 centimeters in diameter, which was considerably better than the 10-centimeter hole it was at level 1. It was still far from enough, though. And so the solution would be for Cora to carry it. The core weighed in at about 80 kilograms, which, all things considered, was relatively light. Not that the female fiend had any trouble handling that sort of weight. She hoisted it up with one hand and put it on her shoulder, cradling it between her head and forearm. Even its awkward size was no problem for someone of her stature. If anything, the way she casually handled it would make one think it was just a fancy beach ball rather than the crystallized heart of a dungeon.
Okay,
said the Mimic after confirming there was nothing of value left in the desolate room.
We're leaving!
It headed off towards the chamber's exit with its familiars leading the way.
Master, why are we walking?
Asked Zira with a bit of annoyance.
Let's just use portal keys to get out.
Portal key? What's that? Is it tasty?
Came the rather predictable response from the chest.
Can I smash it?
Chimed in the fiend with a sharp glint in her eye. Sighed the succubus. She began educating the two airheads about the common, albeit slightly expensive, items known as portal keys. Crushing one of these would teleport an adventurer to the safety of the dungeon's waystone. It was convenient, but came with a few limitations. The user had to stand still when using it. It could only bring out one person at a time due to weight restrictions, and the item was lost after a single use and had absolutely no function outside of a dungeon with a waystone. Not observing any of these rules meant the item would simply fail to activate properly.
Do we have something like that?
Asked the Mimic once the explanation was over.
We do!
She demanded.
Those white stones we looted earlier. They're still in your storage, right?
Oh, the dusty things!
Exclaimed the Mimic. It had seen a few adventurers using the item, but didn't quite understand its effects. That was not until Zira explained them just now. To its infantile mind, it just seemed that the other party disappeared. It didn't want to disappear, so it took extra care to avoid accidentally eating those stones until now. There was just one problem, though.
Can we bring the shiny along with us?
Probably not,
said Zira while hanging her head. The very weight restrictions she mentioned earlier would not allow for the extra heavy dungeon core to be transported.
Then we walk. Arms! K, Can you fight while holding the shiny?
Sure. I still got 3 spare hands, you know.
She gave them a wave to prove her point. Satisfied, the mimic ordered them all to make for the exit. They proceeded down the long, spiraling corridor at a brisk pace. The spider chest had to skitter along faster than normal to keep up with Cora's wide stride. Zira gave up on walking altogether and just glided along behind them on her wings with her staff floating idly by her side. Overall, it was almost a pleasant walk. If only it wasn't for that one nagging thing disturbing the mimic every now and then. The Litigar Dungeon Complex has recognized you as its rightful ruler. Do you wish to become the master of this dungeon? Yes or no? This offer kept reappearing no matter how many times it declined. It had been coming up every 5 or so seconds ever since Cora managed to dislodge it from its spot earlier. However, mimics were ultimately creatures of patience. This particular individual was pretty much a specialist at ignoring others to boot. It would take a lot more than some nagging windows to annoy it into submission.
Just pick yes already. Please? I'm begging you here. Do you wish to become the master of this dungeon? Yes or no?
A weird one popped up by the time they passed the no-entry point on the map and got back into the dungeon proper. The mimic didn't even pay attention to the stubborn pop-up at this point and immediately chose no.
Okay, I get it. You don't want to be a dungeon master. In that case, just leave the core behind already.
It's not like it'll be of any use to you anyway.
Do you wish to become the master of this dungeon? Yes or no?
It seemed that there was some sort of consciousness inside this dungeon, and it was aware of what was going on. Its pleas and attempts to make the monster see reason were quite futile. After all, the selfish box already decided it wanted the shiny. Therefore, it would keep the shiny.
Do you have any idea how long it'll take to grow a new one? Look, I promise I'll make it worth your while if you listen to me and put it down. Do you wish to become the master of this dungeon? Yes or no?
This attempt at bribery might have actually worked if it wasn't worded poorly. If the mimic had been offered many shiny things, it would have undoubtedly paid attention, perhaps even accepted the deal on the spot. However, ambiguous phrases like worth your while went squarely over its metaphorical head and were summarily ignored. It was a crucial blunder. After all, success or failure in negotiations hinged almost entirely on how well one understood their opponent. Therefore, this entity, which did not know a single thing about the monster's thought processes, had no chance of persuading it with words.
Listen here, buddy. You already killed the dungeon master. If you think I'll let you just walk away with that core, then you've got another think coming. Do you wish to become the master of this dungeon? Yes or no?
Whoever or whatever was trying to communicate with the mimic seemed to be getting rather angry, and perhaps a tiny bit desperate if they gave up on diplomacy and resorted to vague threats. The arachno chest still ignored them with all its might, though. Even trying to contact the other two proved to be completely fruitless. That was because Zira and Cora were already bound to the walking chest. There was no way they could be offered a new soul-binding contract while their current one was still in effect. They were therefore completely oblivious to the silent struggle going on inside their master's mind. However, it would seem that it would not go on for much longer.
Fine. I didn't want to do this, but you forced my hand. Don't say you weren't warned.
Do you wish to become the master of this dungeon? Yes or no? The dull red glow that the core gave off until then suddenly intensified, bathing the surroundings in a bright red light. It started flashing this light on and off with a steady rhythm, almost like an alarm. Because that's exactly what it was.
Master?
Said Zira with a rather accusatory tone.
What did you do to the core?
Nothing. Arms is the one holding it.
It shamelessly deflected the blame. Not that it understood how this was any of its fault, though.
Hey! Don't look at me! I'm just holding on to it like I was ordered, and then it started flashing all on its own!
Wait. Do you hear that?
There was a sudden howling and screaming coming in from the passage in front of them, and judging from the increasing volume, it was headed right for the 3 core thieves. An extra large group of undead, About 30 skeletons, 7 ghouls, and a dozen or so ghosts poured out of the next corner and dashed madly towards them.
Arms, smash them up! Snack, support from the back!
The mimic calmly gave out orders. It saw no reason to worry. True, the number of enemies was nothing to sneeze at, but it had already faced similar numbers on the way in. Zira by herself was able to take out most of them with her Inferno spell, and what few were left became food for the mimic's combat skills. So now that the two of them had Korra to take point, this fodder stood absolutely no chance of winning.
Oh yeah! Now this is what I'm talking about!
The fiend in question seemed to really be looking forward to getting her hands dirty, so much so that she ran out to meet their charge while sporting a wide, toothy grin. She smashed into the skeleton soldiers at the front with a wide, sweeping kick that sent them flying and crashing into the stone wall. Weakness to blunt force trauma was a characteristic trait of skeletons, so most of those monsters shattered into pieces and instantly lost their unlife. Their comrades didn't care, though. They just attacked their target, as expected of the mindless undead. The rusty blades of the other skeleton soldiers and the filthy claws of the zombie-like ghouls struck at her. A good number were deflected by the armor on her arms and legs, but over half of the attacks sunk into her flesh. You have suffered a shallow wound, HP minus 19. You have suffered a shallow wound, HP minus 22. You have been afflicted with a disease, max HP reduced by 50. You have suffered a shallow wound, HP minus 13. You have suffered a deep cut, HP minus 38. You have been poisoned, HP minus 9. Your movements have been dulled by the poison. You have suffered a shallow wound, HP minus 23. You have suffered a shallow wound, HP minus 18. Over 100 HP was lost in the blink of an eye. She didn't just sit there and take it, though. Metal-clad punches rained down on the undead like hail while she yelled out, "Ora, ora," over and over. The storm of heavy blows pounded them into the ground until they were naught but dust and splinters. Well, the skeletons were anyway. The ghouls became more of a bloody smear on the floor and walls. Zira didn't sit idle, either. She called forth an inferno to decimate the undead platoon's back line that consisted of skeletal archers, skeletal mages, and ghosts. They were all wiped out before they could unleash their arrows and magic onto the gigantic red target in front of them. A few well-placed fireballs picked off any surviving ghosts. And while the demon girls were busy clearing the way, their master just sort of stood back and kept an eye on things. Well, it didn't see a need to interfere. Its magic would be as ineffective as ever, and slicing up undead seemed to make its swords deteriorate much quicker than when it used them on people or animals. It needed to take better care of them until it could learn to maintain them properly. Not to mention it was down to its last 6 weapons. 4 of them, 2 swords and 2 mithril daggers, were picked up in this dungeon. The remaining 2 blades, a worn-out sword and that shiny enchanted knife, were leftovers from its newbie hunting days. Proficiency level increased. Summon familiar is now level 5. Intelligence plus 2. Wisdom plus 1. Mental fortitude plus 1. Proficiency level increased. Demonology is now level 2. Wisdom plus 2. Mental fortitude plus 2. So instead of dulling its weapons needlessly, it simply enjoyed the sweet taste of its skills going up in level without it actually needing to do anything. However, it noticed that demonology did not go up as quickly as expected. Usually a new skill would shoot to level 3 quite rapidly with a huge engagement like this, but it just barely seemed to reach level 2. If it was going to be this slow, then getting it all the way to level 7 would take forever. Maybe it misunderstood the way it should be using this skill? It's true that simply having the second familiar participate in combat increased proficiency, but the gains were way too small. Now that it thought about it, wouldn't demonology go up quicker if it performed some of those rituals? Well, it would have to wait a while before testing that out. Pretty much all of the ceremonies it knew about needed troll blood. It wasn't even sure what the fuck a troll was.
Yeah!
Screamed Korra triumphantly while standing ankle-deep in undead bits.
Get smashed, son!
This odd cheer snapped the mimic out of its thoughts. It appeared that the 2 demons were done cleaning up the undead. The one-sided massacre didn't even last a minute. Checking their statuses, the mimic confirmed that Korra had lost about 250 HP while Zira had used up about a third of her MP.
Arms! Why is your max HP so low?
It asked after spotting the oddity in her status. The value in question was currently listed as 374 out of 515. Wasn't it over 600 just a few minutes ago?
I'm still poisoned and diseased.
Oh, right. Abnormal statuses like that were common when fighting the undead at close range.
You just realized this now?
Snack! Shut up and fix her!
Yes, master.
The succubus went up to Cora and put a hand on her chiseled abs, right over the already festering wound left behind by a ghoul.
Hey!
Exclaimed her patient.
What are you doing?
Just following orders, dearie.
And how is poking my wound going to—
Purge!
Plumes of blue flame shot out of all the fiend's open wounds and it lit her up like a dangerous Christmas tree. They burned away the toxins in her system while cauterizing her wounds, accompanied by a momentary spike of pain. Your body has been purified by the flames. HP minus 30. You are no longer poisoned. You are no longer diseased. You are no longer bleeding. Cora immediately confirmed the feeling in her body was back to normal. Well, she was covered in burns rather than open wounds, but at least she could move properly again.
Oh! I can move freely again! Thanks, slut,
she said with a toothy grin.
I have a name, you nitwit,
retorted Zira while sneering.
My bad, my bad. Thanks, snack.
Ho ho ho! Sounds like someone wants their face melted off.
Bring it, short stuff! I'll pummel you so hard only your tits will be left behind. Ha!
As if a clumsy oaf like you could ever catch the likes of me.
Sparks seemed to fly between them as the two glared at each other with murderous intent. Simply because they both had the same master didn't mean they would get along. It actually seemed to have the opposite effect. After all, one of them was a succubus that thrived on deception and conspiracy, a creature whose manipulative and cunning nature could incite lifelong friends to betray each other. Toppling entire kingdoms from within was entirely possible for the winged seductress, highly unlikely, but possible nonetheless. And her co-contractor just happened to be a fiend, a demon that wanted nothing less than to crush her enemies, see them driven before her and hear the lamentations of their women. Or men. Or pet dogs. The Mountain of Muscle didn't have any prejudices in that regard and would gladly accept all forms of lamentation, regardless of who or what they came from. In fact, the only thing in common these two species of demons had was how much they hated each other. Cora and Zira were no different and would undoubtedly be trying to kill one another if their summoning contracts weren't holding them back. From a magical standpoint, a bound demon was more or less an extension of its master. The two of them were completely unable to physically harm one another without their master's say-so. A fact which both of them seemed to realize at the same time.
Master! Requesting permission to kill this bitch!
They screamed out in perfect sync. The answer they got was a stone thrown to the face that gave them matching black eyes.
No time for that, said the mimic. More enemies are coming. A lot more.
What makes you say that, master?
Asked Zira while rubbing her injured face.
Look at the shiny!
Both of them then stared at the still flashing core on Cora's shoulder. They stared at it, but failed to comprehend what was odd about it. Well, other than the obnoxious light, that is.
What about it?
Asked Zira.
Dunno, said Cora. It does seem to feel a bit heavier, though.
Unfortunately, neither of the two demons had the means to see what their master was talking about. At least, not with their eyes. The mimic's senses seemed to have grown sharper ever since its rank up. Its magical perception, in particular, turned out to be quite sensitive. It was at the point where it was capable of reading the thick flow of mana in the dungeon's air if it focused hard enough. That's how it knew that the core was currently pulling a huge amount of that mana into itself. The mystical current was so strong that it caused the remains of the undead to dissipate much faster than normal due to the loose magical energy being pulled out of them by force. And all that errant mana was being absorbed by the core. So what was its purpose in doing so? That was a mystery. However, the side effects of that action were obvious to the former resident of this place.
It's pulling the dungeon toward us.
The monsters in a dungeon would follow the flow of mana without fail. Part 4. A swarm of 20 or so giant spiders skittered through the tunnels of the Yellow Zone. This part of the dungeon was a cave system not unlike the Green Zone, but its residents were mostly of the arachnid or insectoid persuasion. The dungeon core is in danger. Such a message was relayed to all monsters that belonged to this place, and the oddity in the dungeon's thick mana was guiding them to the object they were programmed to protect. They were certain they were getting close to the source of the distress signal, but less certain about the odd rumbling that could be felt through the walls and floors of this passage. They were approaching a bend in the tunnel when the ones in front spotted the telltale red glow of the dungeon core being nearby, and judging from how it increased in intensity with every flash, it was moving towards them. However, the first thing to pop out of the corner was a wooden box with 8 imitation spider legs of its own. They were oddly similar, yet also quite different from the actual spider legs of these monsters, and out of the opened lid streamed 3 tentacles, each gripping onto a shiny dagger, though one seemed to be different from the other two. Not that any of them had time to appreciate such things. The arachno chest bore down on them at great speed, easily surpassing their own, and they immediately